What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 144. Today, we're going to be continuing our conversation on the book Civilized to Death by Christopher Ryan. It's something I talked about it last week in our intro that we've just talked about, how to be healthy via your diet, what to eat, when to eat, that type of stuff. We talked about how to be healthy via different workout routines, what you should do to be the strongest person possible. But there's an entire other aspect of being happy and being healthy that we really haven't gotten into. And this book really dived into it in a bunch of different ways. And Tom read it and he just felt really strongly that it should be a topic of the podcast. And so it's going to be for the next maybe two or three episodes, we're going to be talking about it. And this one's going to be a little bit different, probably than we've ever talked about. So, Tom, do you want to just get into it?
Yeah. So before we really get started into like the details of this podcast, I just want to give everybody like a little bit of a warning that it's going to be a little controversial and it might not be suitable for like younger listeners. Cause the topic today is going to be about like sex. So if you don't want to be listening to that, or if you don't want your kids, like now's the time to probably just skip this episode.
Fair warning.
Yeah. So, all right, let's just kind of just go right into it. So it's pretty common knowledge that chimpanzees are humans' closest living relatives. Scientists have been using their behavior to explain our own behavior. So with chimps, they have organized group conflict, aka war. And other than us, they're the only other species that do this. Like no other species groups up together to go attack another group of its own species. Like, sharks don't team up to go hunt other sharks. You know, wolves don't team up together to go attack other wolves or anything like that. Like, chimps and humans are the only ones that form large groups and then just go kill others of its own species.
Yeah, it's very, very unique. You can say trait or flaw, whatever you want to describe it, I guess.
Yeah, I would say it's a flaw. It's definitely not a good thing, because if it was, we would see that throughout the animal kingdom.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good way to point out, yeah.
So other things that we have in common, other than forming groups to go kill each other, we also form groups to hunt. A lot of people don't know this, but chimpanzees are pretty damn good hunters. They also use tools that probably helps them in their like successful hunts and their warfare. And there's a bunch of other behaviors that we have in common. But humans and chimps are both violent because of their genetics. That's what like the scientific field believes in. I mean, that seems to, you know, make sense if you follow that line of thinking. They're our closest living relative. They do warfare. We do warfare. So it must be something in our genes. That makes sense to you, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to, well, maybe this is a good place to state my opinion on this, but real quick, I know you've heard this a million times. You go into a family and, you know, even a doctor will ask your family history of diabetes, your family history of heart disease. And they'll say, oh, my dad had it, my mom had it, my sister has it. And they'll just say, oh, you inherited bad genetics. You've heard that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
All the time.
I say no one inherits bad genetics. We all are the peak of civilization. We are crushing the game. I don't care if you are the poorest human on earth compared to other animals from the rest of the billion years that Earth has been around. We won the game. People don't inherit bad genetics. They inherit bad habits and bad eating habits specifically for this example. So you can be genetically predispositioned to be diabetic. Maybe you're just naturally less insulin sensitive for whatever reason. But If everyone ate the way they're supposed to eat in an ancestral-based diet, no one would be diabetic, especially type 2 diabetic specifically is what I'm talking about, because that's what our genetics support. All of our genetics support an ancestral-based diet. So I don't think people inherit bad genetics. I think their environment, they inherit bad behaviors.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with that. Mm-hmm. It's not the genetics, it's the behavior.
Yeah.
Because if your parents grew up getting donuts every Sunday...
So do you.
Guess what? You grew up getting donuts every Sunday.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and then you're going to pass that on, and that's why there's that family history. Yep. Like, that's what I totally agree with.
Yeah. But this example kind of leads into that.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Because there is one major flaw with this line of thinking. Bonobos are equally close to humans genetically. However, their behavior is almost the complete opposite. So humans and chimps, yeah, we're really closely related. Humans and bonobos were just as closely related. But scientists never compare humans to bonobos because it doesn't really match like the hypothesis that they're trying to prove.
Yeah, it doesn't go with the narrative they've created.
Yeah. So bonobos are very peaceful. Like, they might be one of the most peaceful animals on this planet.
Aren't they? Like, they're just a cute little monkeys, right?
They're kind of like a smaller version of a chimp.
Yeah.
Like, that would be the best way to explain what they look like. In fact, like, when scientists first discovered bonobos, they thought they were chimps. And then it kind of took, like, a little bit further along before they were finally able to make them different species. So, yeah. So, they're great at sharing. They're great at cooperating. They never use violence. Like, they don't really... It doesn't seem like they have any sort of conflicts at all in their society. I mean, and they are group animals, just like humans, just like chimps. So, but what they do is they have sex pretty much all the time. Anytime they have some sort of problem, sex. Anytime food's available, sex. Just pretty much sexual behavior all the time, as often as they can. So pretty much the way we use money, that's what bonobos use sex for. So favors, sharing food to avoid conflict, to create closer bonds. They have group sex, same gender sex, oral sex, pretty much any kind of sex you can think of, but bonobos do it.
Yeah, I guess because they're not printing money, right? So they can't use that.
Yeah, so pretty much if you see like a bonobo exhibit at a zoo at feeding time, there's basically like a big orgy right when the food comes out. And what that does is it kind of like, instead of one of the more dominant bonobos taking all the food, it kind of calms them down, and then they're in a more giving mood. So then they share all the food equally. So they have a really peaceful environment around them. But despite all the sex that they're having, rape is pretty much non-existent. And the females typically give birth every 5 to 6 years, which is the same as chimps. And it's also the same as humans in most hunter-gatherer societies. So despite all the sex that they're having, it's not forced. And they're not reproducing at a crazy rate. So if we want to compare ourselves to our closest living relatives, we should compare ourselves both to chimps and bonobos.
Yeah, so because that paints more of a full picture on how our genetics, quote unquote, should dictate how we act.
Yeah, because it doesn't seem like, hey, there's a conflict. Oh, we need to go kill each other. It's like, hey, there are some other like options instead. Mm-hmm. We don't need to always go violent.
Yeah.
All right. So now we've kind of looked at how our closest living relatives treat sex. Let's kind of look at how humans treat sex. So wild humans, aka hunter-gatherers, they treat sex in a wide variety of ways. So there is no like one common thing. Some are monogamous, some are polygamous. There's one group that believes that a woman needs to have sex with multiple men, like a smart one, a strong one, a funny one, like a great hunter, for that child to gain all those characteristics. And it's a combination of all their sperm that creates the child. I know this sounds kind of ridiculous to us, but it actually provides many benefits. Because now all those men feel responsible for that child. So instead of that child having one father, it has like multiple fathers looking out for him. And if that kid does spend time with a great hunter, somebody that's funny, you know, somebody that's strong, it's going to gain all those characteristics too. So while it's not like scientifically factual, it actually does work.
Yeah, and it creates a couple well-rounded humans out of it.
Yeah, and now you don't have to worry about that child being uncared for. And if one of those men happens to die in like a hunting accident or, you know, something else, that child is still being looked after.
Yeah. Oh, I totally see the benefits of it. It makes no sense biologically, but I get it.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds ridiculous to us, but no, I mean, looking back at it, it does make total sense. Mm-hmm. So what the hunter-gatherer tribes do have in common is they view sex as natural, enjoyable, and something other than just for reproduction. So not quite like bonobo status, but a little bit more than how many humans look at it today. And many males also report that they feel least attracted to their partner when she is either pregnant or breastfeeding. It's probably like an instinctual way of knowing that she's not healthy right now because she has other things going on because she's feeding for two. So it's a bad time for her to get pregnant so soon. So I think that's why men are like least attracted to their mates at that time. Because, I mean, it makes sense. They shouldn't be reproducing, kicking out babies year after year after year. Like, they need some time in between.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, and just like chimps and bonobos, I think I mentioned this earlier, typical hunter-gatherer tribes usually go about 5 to 6 years in between children, too.
So that's now perfect, let's look actually. At how, what's like, the book of, sorry to cut you off, but the book from the Lakers nutritionist, what's that lady's name?
Catherine Shanahan.
Yeah, what was her book called? Great book.
I can't remember, but she talks about this.
Yeah, she talks about the toll it takes on a woman to have a child.
Her number, I believe, is like 3.5 years is like the minimum you should wait.
Yeah, just so that not that I don't love kids or anything, but those kids rob the woman of a lot of minerals, a lot of vitamins, and a lot of just life essence. And it just takes a lot of time for a woman to actually bounce back.
Yeah, and one thing that she talks about in that book is how a lot of like the most beautiful like movie stars and stuff, they're generally the first child, and if you look at their younger siblings, their younger siblings are nowhere near as good looking, and that's because of like this whole genetic thing. Like they're not getting the mother most likely isn't fully recovered from that first birth, so she's not able to pass on the same amount of nutrients to the second child.
Yep, that genetic wealth. She talks about it a lot. Maybe in the post, I'll try and link the book, but it's a great book. Recommend that as well. But yeah, it makes perfect sense, and of course, our ancient ancestors didn't need a book to realize this. They didn't need any double-blind studies to realize this. They just knew that you had to give a woman a couple years, 5 to 6, to actually bounce back if you wanted, you know, a bunch of strong children.
Yeah, I mean, we're always talking about how you should listen to your bodies, and like that's pretty much the only information that our ancestors had back in the day.
Yep.
And they were able to figure this stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
So now let's look at how zoo humans view sex, a.k.a. us. So civilized religions demonize non-reproductive sex because civilizations need a large workforce to work the fields, the factories, the mines, and to make up armies. This is why many societies look down on same-sex relationships, birth control, and even things like masturbation. I mean, today our society is a lot more progressive and we have a little bit of a different outlook, but there's still like a large percentage of our current population here and in many other countries that look very down upon these things. So pretty much the rule of thumb is you can only have sex after you've been married and with the intention of reproducing. And this mostly comes from now that we figured out how to get milk from things like cows, goats, camels, you know, those type of animals, women don't need to breastfeed so long and they can become pregnant again sooner so they can create even more workers. I mean, so now a woman, instead of having a child every 5 years, can have a child every year, every other year, something along those lines.
Yeah, because their child's not relying on their milk. Yeah.
Yeah. So this growing population needs more food, so we need more fields. More fields need more workers, and the cycle continues on and on and on. That's one of the main reasons that we have this giant population boom is because of this thing right here. The growing population need more agriculture, and more agriculture needs more people.
Yeah, society and agriculture is really a vicious cycle. It needs more people constantly, and it also kills more people constantly. It's just it's a vicious cycle that eats itself.
Yeah, we're finally starting to realize, like, oh, hey, all this, like, agriculture is starting to take a toll on this planet. Like, Mesopotamia isn't fertile land anymore. Ancient Egypt isn't fertile land anymore. Central Mexico, where the Aztecs live, that's not fertile land anymore. So, like, all those great civilizations of the past are gone and are basically deserts now. So, like, we're starting to kind of connect those dots. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, we'll see if we actually make any real significant progress in this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like we've said in a million other podcasts, but getting the government, either the United States government or any government around the world to actually change policy. It's like changing directions of a cruise ship. It takes a long time because it's such a big vessel.
Yeah, exactly. And there's so many people making money on the current system that got way more influence and they don't want the system to change.
Yep.
So there is no use for non-reproductive sex in this type of system. And I think this is a good time to bring back our old friend, John Harvey Kellogg. He was a medical doctor, a nutritionist, and a health activist. Like mostly his major influence was back in like the late 1800s, early 1900s. We talked about him in the past. He was like a big proponent of quote unquote healthy grains, and he was one of the originators of the vegetarian diet. What podcast did we talk about him in?
Oh man, it was like podcast 11 or 12. It was a long time ago.
Yeah, but we brought him up several times.
Yeah, we have brought him up several times. And his mentor, what was his first name? But Graham, was it Charles Graham? I forget.
I just saw his name and I forgot. I just remember Graham.
Yeah, John Graham, Charles Graham. Cracker. Yeah, it's one of the, but he's the guy who made the Graham cracker. And if you want to learn the history of the Graham guy and the Kellogg brothers, we do have a podcast on that. So you can just search a website for Kellogg and it'll come up. But the history of why 99% of the world thinks that grains are quote unquote healthy, like Tom said, is because of these guys. They originated it. And it's a trip because there's nothing healthy about it. And their reasons for promoting this diet weren't actually health-based. They were based on these crazy ideas they had that Tom's about to go over.
Yeah. So John Harvey Kellogg was a Seventh-day Adventist. That's a group of Christians who don't consume alcohol, drugs, or meat. And he was also like very, very anti-sex of any kind. So just to kind of like emphasize that point, he was married for over 40 years, but they slept in separate bedrooms, and they never had sex. I'm just going to like let that sink in. He was married for over 40 years and never had sex. That seems crazy.
Yeah, very crazy.
He did adopt, I believe, 7 children, but none of them were biologically his. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of proof that he never had sex of any kind, or at least none that the public is aware of.
Mm-hmm.
He was a big fan of doing weekly enemas. So I don't know if there is some other sexual actions that he was participating in. I mean, that kind of sounds like he was a closet, like homosexual, but we just don't know because that thing wasn't accepted back in those times.
Oh, yeah, it's barely accepted now. So back then it was a huge deal. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, especially if he's a Seventh-day Adventist, like, you know, a very, like, highly religious person. Yeah. I don't know if that would have been very accepting within his family or group of friends.
For sure.
Yeah. But, okay, it's kind of like back to the facts. So, it's only when it comes to something like sex and drugs where we consider somebody to be an expert having never tried either one of them. Now, that seems crazy, right? Like, that's, we looked so at this funny guy to be an expert on sex, even though he never experienced it.
Yeah, exactly. And he really was a foundation, like I said, for healthy grains. And also just promoting the whole church's idea of sex only be for reproduction. And this guy never even had it. And it reminds me of, we've talked about Ansel Keys a lot, but Ansel Keys is one of the godfathers of the kind of nutritional guidelines, especially of America. And this dude wasn't a doctor, he had a PhD. He didn't have a PhD in nutrition, he had a PhD in studying eels, the little like squiggly things in water. And yet this is a guy we relied on all of our nutrition information. It's just a bunch of quacks.
And he also, Keys didn't even follow his own advice because he was like known for eating bacon and red meat like several times throughout the week.
Yeah, huge hypocrite. Yeah.
Yeah. But at least Harvey Kellogg stuck to his guns.
That's, or at least appeared to, yeah.
That is the only nice thing I'm going to say about him, because I'm about to paint a very, very negative picture about this
guy. He sucked, yeah.
So he saw masturbation as the worst sin a person could commit. So he created cornflakes with his brother as a way to lower libido and prevent masturbation. This is the same reason that he promoted a vegetarian diet. Because it lowers your testosterone, lowers your sex drive, and yeah, that's pretty much what he's just trying to do. But his crusade against masturbation did not stop there. So for boys, he promoted suturing the foreskin to the shaft of the penis. That's sewing the foreskin to the shaft of the penis. And this would discourage them from getting an erections.
Yeah, I think a little bit.
So I was once a teenage boy, and this is the worst punishment I could even imagine. Because at that time, you're so full of hormones that you've never experienced before in your life. Like, you don't know what's going on, you get erections all the time. Like, you bump into somebody in the hallway at school, you get an erection. You could just be sitting in class, and for no apparent reason, you're going to, like, get an erection. And it's natural to get 2 to 3 erections a night just during sleep. So, like, that's the worst kind of torture I could ever imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very effective, though, to get someone to think your way about sex, you know?
But this isn't even something they can control. Like, I don't even know. Like, you would have to go around just thinking that there's something wrong with you, because every time something natural like this happens, like, you're feeling a severe amount of pain.
Yeah, no, I know. It's very twisted and messed up.
Yeah, like, and you can't control any of that. Like, it's so torturous. I can't believe that anybody let them do this stuff.
Yeah.
But wait, there's more. So for teenage girls caught touching themselves, he promoted pouring carbolic acid onto the girl's clitoris. So carbolic acid causes burning and numbness, and it can even lead to necrosis and gangrene. So that means that's death of the tissue. And since that is an area that you can't exactly amputate, like, that can become life-threatening. So a girl caught touching themselves could potentially die because of him. Like, yeah. That seems a bit extreme for, like, some normal, like, natural behavior type stuff.
Yeah, I mean, but to him, I bet if somebody did die back then, and I'm sure there were deaths because of this back then, he probably thought they deserved it.
Yeah, because he thought this was the worst sin a person could commit.
Yeah, so I doubt this guy had any sympathy for these people.
Yeah, I'm just wondering what happened to him when he was a teenager that he hated natural teenage behavior so much.
Oh, you know something happened to him. There was some sort of childhood trauma that shaped his behavior. I mean, it sounds like it. Had to be, yeah.
So I was just imagining, like, what if Kellogg was a bonobo? Like, if there was a bonobo Kellogg out there that was so anti-sex, anti-anything like that, and just everybody around you is having sex every time there's a meal, just, like, there's a disagreement, they're having sex, like, just sex all the time around you. Like, what would happen to him?
Oh, he'd probably kill himself.
Would he get banned from the group? Would he commit suicide? Like, what would happen?
Yeah, one of the two, for sure.
So, I mean, I guess it's a good thing for Kellogg that he was a human and not a bonobo.
Yeah, because in our little society, this crazy-ass person can actually gain traction and be relevant 130 years after they died.
Yeah, which is crazy. This Batman has had significant influence on the way our society views nutrition and sex today. People all across the country, all across the world, are having Kellogg's cornflakes or other Kellogg's cereal for breakfast on a daily basis because they think it's a healthy food. And it's not. The only thing healthy about it is if you're using real milk. And even that milk isn't the most nutritious thing, because you're probably using some sort of fake milk, skim milk, 2%. You're not even using 100%, I mean, like, whole milk or raw milk, something along those lines.
Oh, yeah. No, not to bash my brother, but one of my brothers, he just won't listen to me because they're all fairly, they on the outside, they all look healthy and strong, and they probably are, right? But I go to his house, and he has skim milk in his fridge every time. And I'm like, bro, why do you live this way? I was like, how hard is it to buy whole milk? I was like, it's right next to it. I was like, if you did this, your breakfast would be a million times healthier. But they just never do.
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard.
It's
like,
hard.
Once you've been hearing something all your life, you know, it's hard to change.
Yeah. But it just tastes better. It's creamier. I mean, skim milk is basically just sugar water.
Yeah, it is pretty nasty. Yeah. Like, I'd rather just not have milk and skim milk with my whale.
Just leave it alone, exactly.
So he promoted abstinence in every single way possible. And this teaching of abstinence only leads to, like, just many sexually frustrated young men and women. And that is a very, very bad thing. So sexually frustrated young men direct this feeling outward, often turning violent and aggressive. The most common characteristic among, like, mass shooters and serial killers is sexual frustration. So either they're struggling to find a partner, or our society doesn't accept their sexual preference. And so they're just committing, like, all these horrific crimes. Like, the worst people in our country or worst people in our society are usually sexually frustrated. So that doesn't seem like we should be having a system that's promoting people to become sexually frustrated.
Yeah, that leads into a whole other discussion of this system has, like, design flaws in it to keep it running. You know what I'm saying? Like, to keep the police running, you need criminals. To keep the jails open, you need people to go to prison. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, mm-hmm. I do, but, like,
That's a whole other conversation. I know
this is creating like the worst of the worst, and this is something that we should definitely address.
Yeah, I agree.
Nobody wants there to be more mass shooters or more serial killers, anything like that.
Yeah.
We're either blaming the guns, we're blaming rap music, or we blame rock and roll
video games.
Yeah, we blame all these other things. It's like, no, it's our society.
Yep.
Like, that's what it really is. We don't want to point the finger at ourselves, but that's what we need to do.
Mm-hmm.
So sexually frustrated young women tend to direct this feeling inward. They blame themselves, and they often develop self-esteem issues, body issues, and or eating disorders. So they'll become bulimic, anorexic, something along those lines, depressed, all those type of feelings. And that's another like serious problem, especially in teenage women. That's mm-hmm. another thing that our society has a really big issue with.
So at least they don't shoot people.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good thing. At least they're only like damaging themselves and not everybody else, but they're still...
They're
still damaging themselves for something that's not really their fault.
It's society's fault. Yeah, easily fixable. Well, I mean, fixable if we change things, yeah.
Yeah, it's the zoo. It's not them.
Yeah.
It's not the human behavior. It's the zoo that they're in. So, like, that's what we need to fix. So, let's compare our zoo to a different zoo. And so, the Dutch, that's the Netherlands, they treat young men and women like the sexual beings that they are. They know that trying to keep their hormones under control all the time is going to be a losing battle. Like, you can't do it. So instead, they teach their kids about sex at 4 years old and continue that education throughout school, kind of like what we do with math. You know, like every year you take math? Yeah, they do the same thing, but with sexual education. And they also have public education displays and things like museums. And besides this teaching, like, their children about the biology of sex, they actually teach them about relationships, assertiveness, self-play, acceptance, communication, all these other things that are involved with healthy sex. And I know this sounds like a radical idea that will probably just lead to disastrous results. But the Dutch has significantly lower teenage pregnancy, STIs, bullying, sexual violence, and abortions. They are also one of the highest ranked countries in the world in gender equality. So, I mean, it kind of seems like Kellogg was wrong and that the Dutch are right. So instead of avoiding human sexuality, we should embrace it. I mean, it seemed to work out pretty well for the bonobos and the Dutch, so why wouldn't it have that same positive influence on us?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I 100% agree with that. And it seems like the Dutch have a lot of things right over there. And I know there are some people who probably bring up it's for various other reasons why the Dutch have those things like, you know, lower teen pregnancy, STIs, bullying, stuff like that. But you can't deny that this is part of the solution. Teaching kids from a young age to be comfortable with these things is beneficial. But in the United States and most other Western, you know, adapted worlds, they push these things under the bed and they like to just try and forget it. And that's obviously not working.
Oh, not at all, because if you don't learn about all these things in school, you're going to learn from them somewhere else. And where are you going to learn that from? I'm guessing today most teenagers probably would learn about sex from things like porn, which is not real. Like, no. That's a horrible place if you're going to be learning how sex works and stuff like that. Yeah, you might learn how the biology works, but you're not learning how a relationship works or any of the other things that go along with it. So it's just setting up unrealistic expectations. You're not learning about how to appropriately be assertive or not assertive, how to communicate with a partner. Like, that stuff doesn't exist. So being able to learn about those things in schools at an early age seems to make so much sense.
Yeah, too much sense that the America will never adopt it.
I mean, just think, like, when's the last time you used something like geometry or algebra?
Never.
Like, I can't remember.
No,
I mean, there's a whole bunch of other, like, classes, like chemistry. I mean, chemistry I kind of use when I'm, like, reading stuff for the podcast or, like, just reading books.
Yeah.
So that's a bad example. But there's plenty of English lessons that I've used or learned over the years that I don't really need either.
Oh, yeah.
But this is something that affects, like, your daily relationships.
For your entire life.
This would affect you for the rest of your life.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know the last time I actually used calculus. Like, come on. I'm not trying to find the radius of this fucking circle every day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so it's like, why not actually teach people that would positively affect their lives and they're going to deal with on a daily basis instead of something that only engineers deal with?
Yep. I mean, but this society is not designed to actually create functional humans. It's designed to create functional wheels on a cog, functional sheep. That's it. And it's super sad. And I'm sure eventually we'll have a podcast on that too. But it's just one of the many flaws in the system we have.
Yeah, I know. Hopefully we can learn from some of these lessons.
Yeah, I hope so. But
that's pretty much all I had to say. Did you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, I mean, honestly, I didn't read this book, and I don't have a ton of background information on this besides, you know, the stuff I talked about. But I think it's really good for a lot of people to know, and hopefully, you know, just start changing people's perspective on this and just even opening their eyes to the zoo that is around them. And maybe they can start. It's almost like the Matrix, you know, you see the Matrix. It's kind of like that. Like when you can finally start seeing the rules and the cages put around you that are invisible to the naked eye, you can finally start to maneuver around them better and hopefully become happier and healthier in this way.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah. And like when I have children, I'm going to be teaching them about sex on my own before and not just expect them to learn it from school and or like doctor's visits and stuff like that. Because pretty much what you, if you go to the doctor and try to talk to them about sex, they're going to tell you, abstinence, that's the key. Like that's pretty much like the our go-to is just like don't have sex. Like that's not a solution.
No, it's so unrealistic and it obviously doesn't work. I mean, it's just super obvious, but
it's whatever. Like if you were like learning how to drive a car and they say the only way to avoid accidents is don't drive a car. Like okay, well how am I supposed to participate in society?
Yeah, it's not, you're not really helping me there. Yeah. But okay, yeah, that's another podcast in the book. Hope you guys liked it. You can find everything at tntwellnessandnutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast provider. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.